Hello and welcome to our talk today, which is about gluten and your health. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you can understand where I'm coming from with gluten. You've heard me speak about it before. And I'm of the opinion that anybody that is experiencing any health challenges at all needs to take a look at gluten and removing it from their diet. I've been studying this topic for a very long time, and I have done a lot of research. I've got stacks and stacks of research papers. I've listened to and read just about everything on the topic. And my ultimate conclusion is that in a person that has any health challenges, any hormonal imbalances, any aches or pains or autoimmune diseases, gluten is not your friend. And based on recently reported findings from doctors and researchers who are, you know, prime and premier immunologists studying the area of gluten, their belief is now that nobody really can digest gluten the way it is today in our modern times, because it's become so hybridized and so changed, and the gliadin content, the gluten and gliadin content of our modern wheat and gluten-containing products is so far from the non-hybridized ancient forms that it's just not okay for any part of the body. So let's talk a little bit more about this topic. So before we begin, I just want to make sure that you're aware that what I'm telling you is not to be taken as medical advice or medical diagnosis. It should not replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. If you're under the care of a doctor, you're on any medications, please be sure to discuss any of the recommendations in this presentation with him or her before you proceed. So with that out of the way, let's dig in. The truth about gluten and how it can silently destroy your health. I think before we begin, we need to start the presentation with what really is gluten, where does it come from, and how we can minimize our exposure and repair the damage that it has caused. There's a lot of other resources besides this presentation that I'm going to give you as part of this module. So, what exactly is gluten anyway? We hear all this fuss and hullabaloo and talk about it being bad for us and controversy about it. So let's take a closer look at what exactly is gluten after all. Gluten is defined as protein or a group of protein found in common grains. The most common of those grains are wheat, barley, rye. Less common are triticale, which is a kind of a hybrid form of wheat, rye, barley combination. Spelt and kamut, which are actually the opposite of a hybrid form. They're actually more of the ancient grains, the untouched, what wheat used to be before we got in there and mucked around with it in our modern technology. So that's technically what gluten is. So let's take a look at where exactly gluten is found in the diet. Well, wheat is found in breads, including Ezekiel bread and Essene bread. And I can't tell you how many people tell me that they're gluten-free. They just eat Essene bread or Ezekiel bread, which is a sprouted bread, commercially available or homemade. Mostly people buy it commercially. And they actually really do contain plenty of gluten. And they actually might be worse because they contain some wheat germ agglutinin, which we'll talk more about in a little bit. So baked goods, you know, anything from muffins and bagels and pies and pie crusts and crackers to homemade stuff, which can contain wheat. A lot of times soups are thickened with wheat. So you may unsuspectingly buy a soup, and if you haven't asked if it's gluten-free and it's just a cream of vegetable soup or just a brothy vegetable soup, there may be some gluten in there to thicken up the broth. Certainly pastas, macaronis, noodles of any kind, cereals, sauces, again, use wheat flour oftentimes in sauces to thicken them up, and salad dressings, believe it or not. So those are all the places. There's probably a whole lot more. In fact, I know there's a whole lot more hidden places where gluten lives, and I'll share with you a resource where you can look that up. Well, barley, we hear barley malt. It's a sweetener. It's an alternative sweetener, supposed to be better and more low glycemic than sugar, but it can have traces of the barley, which can have traces of gluten. So it's strictly prohibited when you look at the celiac websites. Food coloring sometimes has barley in it, soups, malt vinegar, and beer. Beer's a big one. A lot of folks that say, okay, I can handle gluten-free, find out that it's beer that is a problem. Bread, specifically rye bread or pumpernickel bread, have rye in them, which is gluten-containing grain. There's rye beer for those people who are trying to get away from barley, I guess. I'm not sure why, but there are rye beers and cereals. And then spelt and kamut, which are more, like I said, recently rediscovered versions of ancient wheat. And you'll find that in bread, pastas, cereals, even other things like crackers, and specifically in raw sprouted breads. So if you go to, say, a raw foods restaurant and you order pizza, oftentimes the pizza crust is made with sprouted kamut or spelt. I personally used to do that a lot before I got wise to the fact that the gluten wasn't doing my body good. So we know what gluten is and where it's found. So what's the big hullabaloo about gluten? What is gluten intolerance? And why is it that some people cannot digest what's supposedly, you know, the staff of life in a perfectly good food? And is it a fad, or is gluten intolerance real? So for those of you who have discovered for yourself how gluten makes you feel, you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that gluten intolerance is alive and kicking. I personally have had that experience myself. So gluten intolerance is the inability of your body to digest and assimilate gluten without causing you harm. So what does that exactly mean? Well, a gluten intolerance can be as simple as your body doesn't make enough enzyme to break down the complex starch protein combination in there. Or it could be that your body's created antibodies, that your immune system is actually attacking the gluten and the proteins in the gluten, which is the small particles of the gluten, as they go in your bloodstream or as they float their way through your digestive tract. So for some folks, the gluten intolerance is because they are sensitive to the opiate-like byproducts of gluten, and there is one called gluteomorphine, which binds to morphine receptors in the brain and creates an addiction. So if you're the type of person who just can't eat just one piece of bread or one small serving of pasta, you've just got to go for it all and you find yourself craving it even when you have a little bit. That could be because you've got the sensitivity to the gluteomorphines. And quite frankly, a lot of people do have that sensitivity. So you can see that there's a lot of ways that we can be intolerant. And there's one last way, which I didn't mention, which is wheat germ agglutinin, which is a lectin that's formed with gluten. And it's actually said to be enhanced during the sprouting process. So if you eat something that has wheat sprouts, sprouted wheats, and there are a number of supplements on the market that actually have sprouted wheat in there, and there's of course the Ezekiel breads and the Essene breads, then you're gonna be having a problem and a sensitivity to that. And lectins have the ability of just gumming up the intestinal lining and causing inflammation. So it is said by the experts in gluten research, immunologists that have been studying it for many years are said to be the biggest world experts on them. They actually say that they don't believe that anybody has the ability to really tolerate gluten, if you want to call it, meaning thrive on it. Because gluten itself creates inflammation in the small intestine. So what does it look like? We're going to look at that in just a little bit. So how do you know if you have a gluten intolerance? My personal belief, and that's backed up by a lot of the scientists who are studying this, is that anyone who has any symptoms at all, meaning depression, low thyroid function, autoimmune situation, digestive woes, headaches, joint pain, any kind of chronic inflammation, you need to be looking at gluten as a culprit and get it out of your diet. And my recommendation is for a 6-month abstinence period so that you can really allow it to settle down, because a lot of the research shows that it takes about 6 months before the antibody reaction actually settles down. So let's talk a little bit about your immune system and how your immune system starts to attack gluten which could create problems for you throughout your body. Your immune system's job is to protect yourself. It's like the police department and army of your body. It's deflecting off the bad stuff. And it creates a bunch of responses when that happens. So the things that your body is trying to protect yourself from, your immune system, is bacteria, viruses, fungi, yeasts, molds, food particles that get into the bloodstream. Food particles, recall, are supposed to stay in the digestive tract and be eliminated. But when we have a constant diet and lifestyle that supports breakdown of that digestive tract, so drinking a lot of alcohol or caffeine, a lot of pesticides in the foods, a lot of exposure to chemicals, eating too fast and under stress, and you got it, eating gluten, which destroys the microvilli in the intestinal tract. What this does is creates a condition called leaky gut that allows food particles to make their way through the barrier. It's like the little shield gets holes in it. And instead of deflecting off of the immune barrier in your gut, the food particles are actually able to penetrate through, which can create an immune response, just as if it was your body protecting you from a bacteria or a fungus. Dirt is another thing your immune system protects yourself from, and that's usually happening more in the nose, the sinuses, and the lungs. You cough that stuff up and out. And then there's parasites, of course. You know, parasites are, you know, just like funguses, bacteria, and molds. They're damaging to the body, and your immune system has to push them away. And then finally, environmental toxins, things that are in the environment that are just not serving you. Your immune system, part of your immune system's job is to deflect those. So let's talk a little bit about immunoglobulins, because when we talk about testing for gluten intolerance, you're going to hear about immunoglobulins. And these are antibodies. Antibodies, aka immunoglobulins. And there are actually five classes of them. You've got, they're all here. You've got your IgMs and IgDs, which are first line defense. They come in when you're first having an attack. IgG is the most prevalent in the blood, and they come in a little bit later, and they are there for the longest time. IgAs are in your mucosal surfaces, so in things like the respiratory tract, and your they line your sinuses, in your lungs, in your gut, in mucous membranes, in the reproductive tract. So anything that kind of is a mucus secreting membrane in the body is protected by antibodies called IgA antibodies. And then finally, we have IgE antibodies, which are usually the ones we think of most when we think about allergies. We think of people having sinus problems and hives and things like that. Those are usually mediated by immunoglobulins or antibodies of the IgE category. And they're in the respiratory tract. They're also in the GI tract. And the kinds of reactions that we usually see with this are asthma and hay fever and hives, and they can be involved with parasitic infections as well. So that's just a really brief overview of the immune system and how it works. And we'll talk about how that relates to food allergies and sensitivity to gluten. So food allergies, allergic responses, can be immediate or delayed. And recall, as we just said, foods should not get into the bloodstream. So the only immunologic reaction that should happen to foods is in your digestive tract, and that the idea is to keep that from getting into your bloodstream. But like we said earlier, leaky gut happens, and then these antigens, which is the opposite of antibodies, antigens would be those foreign proteins. So in this case, we're talking gluten. So again, you know, IgA protects the mucous membranes. IgE is that immediate histamine response. You know, histamine is that when you get the weepy eyes and everything is flowing. And then the IgG is usually considered a delayed hypersensitivity. So if you have an IgG type reaction to a food, you may not have a reaction within the first 24 hours. It may occur as much as 3 days later, which makes it really hard to detect. And then IgMs we usually don't measure, but you can. There are allergy tests that measure IgMs in early allergic response. So there's food allergies, and then there's food sensitivities. And food sensitivities are where your body reacts poorly to a particular food, but it doesn't do it through the immune system. So with gluten, we have both food allergy, and we also have sensitivity. in that we have an allergic response, any one of these types of antibodies can be produced and measured. We'll look into a little bit better which ones are preferred. But then also, like we said before, the gluten causes inflammation in the gut. It causes some opiate type responses. So when you're sensitive to a food, you may or may not be able to measure it on a blood test by measuring antibodies. And food allergies, I can't stress enough, they're very frequently caused by a leaky gut, because the leaky gut is a penetration of that barrier. It's a breakdown of that barrier, and it allows the partially digested food particles to enter the bloodstream and be treated as if they're a foreign entity. And this is a little bit more detail. We go into this a lot more in our fat digesting and fat module, where we talk about inflammation, but just basically in the membrane of every cell is this arachidonic acid cascade, which is fed by the fats. And you can either go down and produce really potent inflammatory mediators called leukotrienes or thromboxanes, which are a little bit less. But basically in that cell, it's this masked cell membrane. There's these particular cells that are protective cells, and this cascade creates inflammation. The idea of the inflammation is to kill off the foreign invader. We don't want this to be happening to our food, do we? Again, this is a repeat. We have this in the fatty acid cascade one as well, but basically your firefighters are trying to put out the fire, and the fire's burning, and there are ways to control this via diet and nutrition. And this is some of the ways that when we have gluten intolerance, yes, number one, we want to get off that gluten, because that gluten is creating an immunological response in the body and inflammation. But two, we want to support our body's ability to heal and decrease the inflammation in those areas. And these are some of those nutrients that we'll go into way more detail in our fat module. So now, let's look at what are some of the symptoms of gluten intolerance. Well, I've got four slides of symptoms, and the symptoms can be all over the place. There's, of course, the obvious, right? Some people can gain weight and some people lose weight. People with true celiac disease will sometimes have so much diarrhea that they lose weight as a result of taking in gluten. So let's differentiate intolerance to gluten and celiac disease. A lot of conventionally trained doctors do not know the difference, and they don't acknowledge that there is something called non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So celiac is a condition where the gluten allergy or sensitivity has caused damage to the lining of your small intestine, to the villi in the lining of the small intestine. And that damage is actually measurable and visible. If you do a biopsy, you'll be able to see that those changes in those cells. If you do a scope, an endoscopy, you can see ulcerations in there. That's celiac disease. And by medical convention, celiac disease is only diagnosable by doing a biopsy of the small intestine. Celiac disease has a particular set of genetics that tend to predispose to it. Gluten intolerance have a different set of genetics. There is some overlap. So you can have weight loss when there's just so much malabsorption that everything's moving through you very quickly. Or you can have weight gain in that it causes your body to go into this massive response with the immune system, and there's a lot of inflammation. Nutrient deficiencies can result because of malabsorption. Remember, I said that the villi, which are the absorptive surfaces in the gut, actually get disrupted. And when you've got these villi, and think about finger-like projections. You mean, pick up your hand and open your fingers wide, and now wave your fingers around. Those are your villi in your intestine. And along the side of each finger, every single part of that surface, there are microvilli, and their little projections sticking up to increase the surface area even more. And then along those microvilli, that's where the actual absorption happens. So if you're taking in gluten over time, like most of us, we live our whole lives taking it in until we realize much later the damage it's caused. Well, what happens is, think about those fingers. Now fold your fingers in half and see how much shorter they are and how much less surface area there is if those fingers get cut in half from the damage and the inflammation. Now just fold it down all the way so that you just see the palm of your, the knuckles of your hand. That's what a lot of folks are running around with, and you might be too, where you've gone from having this shag carpet-like appearance of your small intestine to this tile floor appearance. And then absorption goes way, way down, which leads to malabsorption of nutrients, a variety of nutrient imbalances, B12, iron, magnesium, zinc, vitamins, minerals, everything. And as a result, those nutritional deficiencies can lead to symptoms anywhere in the body. And one of the commonly overlooked areas of gluten intolerance, except by those of us who are more savvy on this, but by conventional medicine, is the issue of neurological problems. Now, when I was doing some research, I found papers that dated back as early as the 1930s, where they were making the connection between neurological symptoms and gluten intolerance. So that's a long time ago. This is not a new disease. Also, symptoms can be gastrointestinal symptoms. Those are the most common ones that docs have been trained to look for. Bloating, pain, gas, constipation, diarrhea. And usually they'll start asking questions and they'll find out that, it happens every time I have bread, right? How unfortunately medicine hasn't been equipped up until most recently, they're starting to get a little bit more open as to how to work with people here. The other thing that you might see is fat in the stools, and that's due to poor fat absorption as a result of things being damaged. And that would look like a very light colored, like a clay colored stool or a greasy looking stool. More symptoms of gluten intolerance. These are far away from the gut, right? Aching joints. People are diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis or some sort of arthritis and finding out that, these joints, these aches in the joints are actually related to inflammation caused by an allergy or a sensitivity to gluten. Depression, when it affects the neurology, right? You can have imbalances in serotonin and dopamine and GABA that create a depression. And brain fog is another one that's very commonly associated with gluten intolerance. And just lethargy, brain lethargy, like no motivation. Eczema is another one, skin stuff. Eczema, psoriasis, a number of different skin conditions have been associated back to gluten intolerance. And when someone, and when you, if you have these, get off of gluten, you're gonna have a huge difference. Headaches, just migraines, cluster headaches, what appears to be tension headaches could be related to the inflammatory response of gluten intolerance. And finally, exhaustion. And I hear this all the time. People are just tired. I used to get that way and I never even associated it. I would have a bowl of pasta and I would feel like I wanted to go to sleep. Let's look at more. Some of these are more serious. Infertility, irregular menstrual cycles, miscarriage. These can be really devastating emotionally, yet a simple cause of underlying gluten intolerance can clear some of this up. Cramps, tingling, and numbness in the extremities. Symptoms similar to MS or even MS, multiple sclerosis, has been attributed in some cases, a lot of cases, to gluten intolerance. Slow infant and child growth. That's one of the classic ones that MDs are taught in medical school. Celiac disease causes failure to thrive, meaning the infant or the child grows very slowly. They're very slow and late on their milestones of various things that they do, the developmental things. And that in combination with diarrhea, and that's a classic celiac diagnosis. And let me tell you, I've seen a bunch of kids where that was missed. And then a decline in dental health. Kids having to get fillings and things happening when they're very, very young. Other signs of gluten intolerance, again, more serious. Behavioral changes and irritability. People might be called ADHD. Lack of focus. Early onset Parkinson's. Parkinson's is a dopamine deficiency, a really severe dopamine deficiency. So when we talked earlier about gluten intolerance, being a possibility in depression, it's any kind of neurotransmitter imbalance. Alzheimer's is often called these days type 3 diabetes, or diabetes of the brain, insulin resistance of the brain. But gluten as a source of damaging the brain in such a way that it doesn't produce enough acetylcholine, the neurotransmitter that gets deficient in Alzheimer's. And lots of good results with going on a gluten-free diet and adding extra coconut oil for the MCTs has been helpful for Alzheimer's. And then autism and ADHD, I did a whole paper on the neurodevelopmental issues associated with gluten intolerance, and lots and lots of research on autism and ADHD and Asperger's responding well to getting gluten out of the diet, in addition to a whole bunch of other things as well. But it could be a big component. So if I convinced you yet to try to go gluten-free, well, okay, here's some more. Hormone imbalances, thyroid problems, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and quite frankly, any autoimmune disease, if you have one, you got to be 100%, 1,000% off gluten. Not a morsel of gluten should cross your lips. Insulin resistance, problems with the insulin receptors, they get damaged. Diabetes, especially type 1 diabetes, has been very associated with it. Autoimmune disease of any kind, like I said, Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune disease that can strike the small or the large intestine with ulcerations, big time gluten intolerance association. And then hormone imbalances of other kinds, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, just because of the disruption of these metabolic pathways. Now, have I convinced you yet that it might not be a bad idea to get the gluten out of your diet? So, if you're not convinced, and personally, I haven't ever tested myself, I just know the way my body reacts, and I'm totally willing to keep the extra couple hundred bucks in my pocket. But there are ways to test for gluten intolerance, and you may need that, and you may have relatives who need that, or friends. I know I've worked with clients who have said, well, I'll try to be careful, and they'll get most of the gluten out, but they're not strict when they go out, because they figure, yeah, this is enough. And then when they get the test done, they realize, no, they have to go 100%. So it can be good for those of you who are not 100%, because you think it's okay to be close to 100%. And it's not the case with gluten intolerance, just even a tiny bit. I posted a blog. It was based on a video that Dr. Tom O'Brien did. And I've interviewed Tom O'Brien a few times on my radio show. And he talked about how he was struggling with a case, and she was gluten-free, and she still wasn't getting better. They're doing all this stuff. Well, it turned out she wasn't really gluten-free. He found out, just a happenstance, that she was actually a nun and was taking communion at least once a week, if not more. And those little communion wafers that are used, I know in the Catholic religion, I'm not sure what other religions do that, but at least in the Catholic religion, they're like little wheat, they're basically flat wheat, wheat wafers. And so that little bit that she was getting in her communion wafer was enough to keep her in symptoms. And when she got off of it, boom, the symptoms went away. Dr. O'Brien also shared another story with me when I was talking to him on the phone about his own personal response. He had done a brand new test that came out for testing antibodies, and he got tested because he wanted to see what the test looked like and, you know, who is he going to refer it to for his patients. And voila, he noticed that 3 of the brain antibodies were elevated in him. So basically his body was producing bullets that were shooting at his brain, turning his brain into Swiss cheese, unbeknownst to him, because he wouldn't have symptoms until it was extreme damage done. So he swore up and down they must have made a mistake, contacted the lab. You can't be right. I'm a perfectly healthy person. My brain works just fine. Thank you very much. And they said, no, it is right. They redid it. And so he decided to take his own advice, and he went 100% gluten-free, because he had up until that point thought, well, I don't have any symptoms, I'm not sick, that 100% thing applies just to my patients. Well, he was wrong. So he went 100%, he did some work to heal his leaky gut, and voila, his brain antibodies went away. How's that for a gift? You trade in your gluten for your brain. It's awesome. You trade in your gluten for your fertility. easy trade. You trade in your gluten for your brain functioning properly and not being depressed anymore, or your gut working properly, or your skin being clear. It's all a matter of trade-off. And if you're ill in any way, shape, or form with any kind of hormone imbalance or inflammatory condition, skin condition, digestive disturbances, I urge you to get the gluten-free, and we'll work you through it. So how do we detect? Well, the old-fashioned way, which I think is kind of the gold standard, hard but most accurate, is an elimination diet. It's a process called elimination provocation. So for 4 days, you eliminate all suspects. This is where it gets tricky, because there may be something that you're suspicious of that you don't eliminate. But at least if we're talking about gluten, what we do is we eliminate it. And in the case of gluten, it's more than 4 days. You would probably want to do it at least, I would say, 3 to 6 months. You can fast. Obviously, you're not going to do that 3 to 6 months, but for 4 days, you could. You can use a medical food product, which are just basically protein powders with a lot of nutrients in them. Or you could do what's called the rare foods diet. You just pick foods that you rarely eat, that you only eat maybe once or twice a year, if that, and you do just that for a few days. That way your body is not getting assaulted with the things that it eats on a regular basis. And then the provocation is one new food at a time. There's the three-day rule. You add the food in as much as you can eat for 3 days, and you monitor carefully. If you don't have any symptoms after 3 days, then likely that food is not a problem. This doesn't apply all that well for gluten, because if you don't stay away from it long enough, you don't give your body a chance to heal from all the damage that it's done. But it does help, because a lot of times the gluten is concurrent with other food allergies, and when we just get rid of the gluten and not the rest, a lot of the inflammation is still happening. So there are other ways. There are blood antibody food tests, where you measure the antibody titers to a specific number of foods. Usually they're measuring either IgG or IgG and IgA. Most of them measure just IgG, which, as you recall, is the delayed sensitivity. So if you're having a mucous membrane response, like a lot of times happens in gluten intolerance, it's not going to get picked up by an IgG antibody test. The other issue with that is IgA antibodies are those that are just sitting waiting in the mucous membranes. They're always there and they're on surveillance. So even if you've been away from that food for a while, the IgA will still show, especially if you do an easy stool test for it. The IgGs, though, are usually happening after there's been an exposure. So, for example, if you suspect that you're allergic to gluten and you go off of it for 3 months, and then you want to do a test, if you're going to do a blood test for IgG, you need to eat the gluten before you do it to see if your body reacts, which you may not want to do if you've been getting some good results. Some of the labs also offer a combination of IgM and IgA, and many of them offer IgE, which is just the immediate hypersensitivity, which I generally don't run or think that are valuable, because most people know what their IgEs are because it's an immediate response, okay? I find that blood antibody tests have mixed reliability. I have colleagues who agree with me. I have colleagues who don't. You get a large number of positives when you have a leaky gut. So you may be feeling kind of depressed that you do a food allergy test and you get back that you have 47 foods you're allergic to. What that says is you've got a leaky gut. And we have very specific protocols that we go into in the fast portion of the program. So ALCAT is another kind of antibody test. It's actually not testing antibodies. It's testing leukocyte. Actually, not testing them in the blood. It's testing them in the white blood cells. Mixed reviews on this one. Some say it's more accurate because it's not just looking at the serum. And they're not actually looking at measuring IgE or IgAs. They're basically challenging your blood with the various food particles or isolated food components and seeing how they react. I've done a couple of these tests and you get a lot of positives when you do. So it may or may not be as accurate as you would like or as easy to follow up with as you'd like. They have about 350 foods, chemicals, and herbs that they use. So not the best way, in my opinion, to test for gluten intolerance. And then there's the stool antibody gluten test from Entero Lab. And they basically measure anti-gliadin antibodies in the stool. So they're measuring IgA, and they're measuring, also they measure, if you choose, if you pay extra for the test, they'll measure things that tend to cross-react, like eggs and corn and soy and dairy. Okay, and then you can find out what those are. They're measuring just the IgA. It's in the stool, so the downside is you have to get your pooping into a cup and then sending it off to your lab. They also have tests for inflammatory markers and genetics, so you can actually see, do I have the genes for it? As we'll see, the genes can actually be tested in a much more cost-effective way by doing the entire 23andMe test for about $100 versus their genetics is a couple of hundred, and they only measure the markers for celiac and for gluten intolerance. So, and then recently, over the last 2 years, Cyrex Labs has come out with an array they call Array 3. They name all their tests Array. So they just had 4, they added 5, and now they've got, I think, up to 20 different types of tests that you can do. But the thing about the stool test is, as it's close to accurate as I can get that, they just measure gliadin. And gliadin is the most common component that you're going to have an allergic response to, but it's not the only one. So this Cyrex panel measures 20 different subtractions of gluten, not just the gliadin. So it'll be measuring things like those gluteomorphines and your response to those. It'll be measuring things like the wheat germ agglutinin and a bunch of other stuff. So it is highly sensitive. Downside is you'll have to have somebody draw your blood and then send it off to the lab to be processed. And then there's the gluten cross-reactivity test, also from Cyrex Labs. And 30% of gluten-sensitive people don't get results when they just go off gluten. Now, a lot of people do, and you might be one of them. But if you're one of the 30% that hasn't really gotten those major results by going off of gluten, it could be that you're cross-reacting to other foods. And your body's acting as if those other foods are gluten, when in reality, they're not, and they get the same reaction. So I've had cases of people who have taken the gluten-sensitive, the cross-reactive foods out of their diet and had antibodies for lupus go down like to a manageable level. So it can be pretty dramatic. So they measure foods that are known to cross-react, and 80% of people that are sensitive to gluten are said to be sensitive to casein. All right, so this is a picture of the Cyrex Labs cross-reactivity test. So you can see all the things that they have listed, and they have columns. It's either normal, equivocal meaning there's a borderline response, out of range means there's an absolute definite response, and then they give you the values. So what if you have gluten intolerance? What's the treatment? Well, one treatment is lifelong avoidance of gluten. Now, if you have a simple intolerance because it causes inflammation, if you just stay away from it and occasionally have it, once you're healed, you might get away with it. But I would always test those antibodies just to make sure. Because if you've got the antibodies and you've got the genetics, it's unlikely that you'll ever be able to eat gluten again. Now, the good news is there are a lot of substitutes. The bad news is a lot of the substitutes are pretty bad too. So we'll be giving you lots of recipes to help you to make non-gluten yummy foods. And finally, I've got a book for you, and it's called Eliminate the Gluten and Accelerate Your Health. And it's got a transcript and of a interview that I did about gluten several years ago. It's got some recipes in there. It's got lists of foods to avoid and hidden sources of gluten. And also I think it has some hidden sources of dairy because dairy cross-reacts. So in addition to getting off the gluten, though, it's really important to heal your leaky gut. It's really important to get in there and clean up the damage that's been done to the gut, because otherwise, you're still not going to be absorbing your food properly. You're still going to have inflammation. You may still have diarrhea and some other symptoms. So it's really, really, really important. And if you've gone off gluten and not gotten results, it could be the cross-reactives. It could also be that your gut is still leaky and you need to do it. And it could take a year of, you know, repeated efforts to repair, depending on how bad it is. I mean, without a biopsy, we can't really go in there and see how deep your nice little villi are and how broken down they are. So you have to rely on symptoms. So this concludes my talk about gluten and gluten intolerance. I trust that you'll find this really helpful. And we've got a lot of additional resources on the page to help you. So bottom line, if you have any symptoms of at all, you have low energy, you have joint pain, you have any gut symptoms, skin rashes, problems with your periods, menopausal symptoms, low sex drive, there's any number of symptoms that you could have. If you do, then make a vow to go off the gluten. I recommend going off of the top six allergens for at least a week. If you know of any things you're allergic to, get off of those too. And then really follow the protocols that we give you in the digestive module to help you to repair your gut for good. Thank you so much. This is Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo.